Morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We had quite a group for the last arguments. So I appreciate your patience in waiting through the traffic at the door. The final matter on our calendar for oral argument is the matter of Danielle Ann Oldenburg versus Daniel Frederick Schwanzi. Counsel, I'll remind you that you each have 15 minutes to make your argument. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument because we are making an audio recording. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Timothy Maher, M-A-H-E-R. I'm the attorney for Daniel Schwanzi.
It's in the middle, underneath the podium, kind of in the middle.
Oh. On the face of it, there you go.
Yeah. I know, I had to operate one recently, and it wasn't instinctive as I thought it.
The record here is fairly compact. These are reciprocal cases for orders for protection, one brought by Mr. Schwanzi, one brought by Ms. Oldenburg. Mr. Schwanzi alleged two incidents in the petition, one in February of 2023, another in May 4th, 2023, and the May 4th one is the one Ms. Oldenburg also brought related to that incident. The court limited the evidence it considered to the May 4th incident, and the first two issues brought up by Mr. Schwanzi were the court decided to exclude consideration of the certified medical records of the February 28th incident. And then our second issue is the court limited its interview of the child, Nicholas Schwanzi.
But was that objected to at the time of trial?
I don't know that we had the opportunity to. If you look in the record, the court said, if he's going to testify about his state, if I'm going to consider his statements to the physician, we have to have the child here. And that is on page 46 of the June 27th hearing. She said, if you're going to bring this up, someone needs to bring Nicholas in. And then later on the next page, she said, I'm not considering any of the medical records. So we brought the child in, just as the court said. And then she simply said, I'm only going to interview him about this incident. I mean, she'd made up her mind. I mean, she
was
said.
Was that before she interviewed the child?
On page 66, she said, so we're back on the record. The court had some discussions with counsel, Mr. Maher brought Nicholas, the 8.5-year-old, who was present during the incident, and the court was not comfortable having Nicholas be on the stand. So it looks like she brought him in, interviewed him, and then summarized it for us. A lot of the discussions once he was there was off the record.
And you're not on appeal. That's not the issue. The issue on appeal is the limitation to consideration of only the May 4th incident. Correct?
Yes. I mean, she said, if you're going to bring up this February incident, I want the child to be here. So we brought the child there, and she said, I'm only going to talk to him about the May 4th incident. So
I guess my question, to be clear, is did you know in advance of her interview, did counsel know what the scope of the interview is going to be? Because at that point, there would be an opportunity to object. That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, could you have counsel object? Are you the counsel on appeal and below? I'm sorry.
Yes, okay. I was there. On page 66, it says a recess was taken. I don't recall.
Yep.
Because she was trying to manage the record. So if the court was going to exclude the medical records, and I think that was within the court's discretion, but then said, if you want to bring up this incident, bring the child in, and then decided not to to limit the evidence, especially when it was an in-camera discussion with the child. Court, neither I nor Mr. Carlson saw anything that went on, And she could have done what she indicated, which was consider his statements to the physician on February 28th. Now, then our third issue is the court having said, I'm not going to consider the medical records because we offered ours, Mr. Carlson offered her medical records, and I said, ours are certified. If you're not going to consider ours, we want you to strike hers. And the court said, the court agreed. She said, I'm not going to consider the medical records. That's on page 47 of the transcript from June 27th. But she made then a specific finding. This is number 22 in the 1211 court file. Ms. Oldenburg provided the court with her medical records from the visit. The records indicate that Ms. Oldenburg had bruising to her left shoulder. So she excluded our medical records. She didn't interview the child. She said she was not going to consider their medical records. And then she makes an explicit finding based on that evidence, which wasn't in the record.
But isn't that finding harmless error? I mean, I agree with you. It seems inconsistent with the ruling. But given the other findings with respect to the injury that respondent sustained, including the photographs and her testimony, isn't that reference to the medical records really cumulative?
When you look at our fourth issue, which I think is really flows from that, that she issued an order on Ms. Oldenburg's case, an order for protection. She did not issue one on Mr. Shands's case. But what she didn't do is she didn't make a finding that abuse took place. She said he testified about this, that he was trying to protect the child. If you look in her synopsis of the child's testimony, the child said, yeah, I thought Dad was trying to protect me. Then she went through all the testimony of Ms. Oldenburg, and nowhere in the orders does she make a credibility determination or a finding that what Mr. Shands did constituted abuse. Maybe she could have made that finding, but this court can't make that finding. The court can't say, I mean, if she had said abuse occurred and maybe didn't support it, this court could say, well, yeah, but looking in the record, the evidence supports that finding, but she didn't make the finding of abuse. So at the very least, I think this court needs to vacate and dismiss the order for protection against Mr. Shands because that finding is missing.
Wouldn't we have case law support, do we not, that we could remand in that situation? Why wouldn't we remand if the record would be sufficient to find, had the district court found, that abuse occurred? Why wouldn't we remand to ask the district court to actually make what I think, and I appreciate your argument very much, that there's no, it relayed the two competing stories, but there's not a finding saying, I find one more credible. Although, presumably, that's why the court issued.
The court could do that. And I would ask, if the court decides to remand for further proceedings, allow us, remand our case as well, so that we can either bring the child in again or satisfy the court as to the medical records from February 28th. The reason why I say vacate and dismiss is the order from the court has already expired. I think it expired on April 2nd. And so if the court goes back, if you remand it for further proceedings, the court's going to be issuing findings for an order that is no longer in effect.
But the fact that it's expired doesn't make the issue moot for this court, right?
I mean, no,
there
it
continue
doesn't,
to be it, consequences as a result of having an order for protection issued.
Exactly. So it's not, there is an exception to the mootness. But if the court, is it going to be a good use of judicial time to do that, to send it back for us to present evidence relating to the February 28th incident and to have the court do more work on this. And I guess that
right.
would...
I guess I do separate the two orders. I know they were consolidated in the hearing, but if the problem with the order granting it is the failure to make a credibility finding that would determine whether abuse occurred after the recitation of the evidence, I see that as, I don't see the need for taking further evidence for that. The district court looks at what the record was and makes its factual finding. And if it determines, oh, I guess abuse didn't occur, you know, I'm vacating the order or what have you. But if the district court decides, yeah, I think abuse did occur, I failed to make that finding, I'm making it now. That's a different question from whether you should be permitted to, whether the record would be reopened on the other case because you feel you didn't get sufficient evidence in.
Well,
that there was error in excluding evidence from your
Well, we would be asking for that to take place. We would be asking the court to reopen that record because we did what the court asked us to do, and then the court refused to hear the evidence that we wanted to offer.
What was the basis for the court's exclusion of the medical records? Isn't that there was not the medical provider there to say that these were records kept for the purposes of diagnosis and treatment, et cetera?
There wasn't a custodian. But, I mean, we could have bugged the hospital. I think what we were trying to do is not inconvenience the child unnecessarily and not inconvenience the hospital. We obtained certified records, which there was not a question as to the authenticity of it. It was simply
right, to overcome the hearsay objection.
Yeah, I mean.
But is that... Was that an abuse of discretion to exclude, but for the district court to exclude on that basis, that the hearsay objection was not met?
I think the abuse of discretion came in where she said, I'm going to exclude this. I want the child here. And when we brought the child, said, I'm not going to ask the child about that. I mean, and I understand why the court wouldn't want to subject the child to cross-examination, but we did what the court said we should do, and then the court simply ignored those allegations, which, you know, were serious allegations of abuse. So I'm not sure if I've answered your question.
No, thank you.
Okay. I do have time remaining, but I think I've addressed the matters I want to address, and so unless there are other questions...
Seeing none,
thank you.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. I'm going to try to just limit it to the four questions here that...
You need to state your name and the party you represent.
James Carlson on behalf of Ms. Oldenburg.
Thank you.
Who in this case is the respondent. The questions that Mr. Maher, counsel, is asking is, did the court err when they did not admit the certified records? Just so you're clear, I was there for the initial hearing. So was Mr. Maher. What had happened was that my client got on the stand and was testifying. When she testified, as part of the petition, her medical records were in there. We asked her about her medical records. The judge, being qualified as she is, asked counsel, appellant's counsel, have you gotten a copy of the records? He said yes. He did not object to those records. Absolutely did not object to those records. So the judge accepted them at that time. We then went on. There were photographs that were shown. She testified about what happened at the doctor's office. All those things came in. So the records, by the time the next day rolls around when Mr. Maher tries to end up entering the child's therapist records, we objected. There's nobody there. It's not as though it related. That's not the individual that was essentially allegedly injured. So we objected, saying, wait a second. You can't just bring them in because they're certified records. What we also advised, we said, Your Honor, they tried to make a hearsay exception to that, at which point we argued and said the hearsay exception would possibly come in if it has to do with diagnosis and treatment. These records had nothing to do with diagnosis and treatment whatsoever. And they didn't have somebody there to lay foundation. That's why the judge didn't accept them. At that point, appellant's counsel went back and said, well, then we're going to object to the records that you've already allowed in. We're going to ask that they be stricken. So the judge said, I will strike those records then.
And you agree that the district court erred in making a finding based on records that the court had excluded?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree that they erred because of the idea, like I say, when we offered them, there was no objection. So that would be the equivalent of stipulating to them. Now, if in fact, when he did object later, the judge made a ruling and said, okay, we're going to exclude the medical records
right.
then.
So this finding is inconsistent with the court's ruling, isn't it?
Well, I guess at the time, I don't think it was. I would agree now saying, okay, they probably shouldn't have been allowed in initially, and had Mr. Maher objected to him, I suspect we would have had that argument, but the court clearly didn't abuse their discretion by allowing them in. I will say that, interestingly enough, Justice Smith ends up arguing, ended up saying, wasn't that just harmless error? That's exactly what our argument is, Your Honor. We're saying it was duplicative, to say the least. Extremely duplicative because of the idea that our client testified about everything that was in those records and also testified about the bruising on her shoulder. The judge in the district court saw the bruising on the shoulder and also saw the videotape from the interview at the police department. So I would say that is absolutely harmless in error, Your Honor. The next issue with regards to the minor child, I'm extremely concerned that Mr. Maher, when he comes in, says he doesn't end up remembering the events that happened. I can tell you, Your Honor, what happened was that the judge brought myself and Mr. Maher back into, not in chambers, but we went back behind in the hallways to discuss the idea. The child was not, in fact, at the court hearing at the time. Essentially, when they had been told that the medical records were not going to be coming in, his client decided he was going to go and pick the child up from school. So he left to go get the child from school. In the interim, we were back, again, not in chambers, but in the hallway with Her Honor, and we were discussing what was going to happen, how she was going to proceed. She advised she did not want to put this child on the stand to end up having to do a cross-exam.
Just to make sure that, so I want to make sure that we're talking about what's on the record.
Yes.
When I see, I'm looking at the trial, and maybe, I don't know if what you're talking about is on the record, these hallway conversations.
It was not on the record.
Okay. So if we can just look at the record, when I look at page 66 of the trial transcript, the district court says we're going back on the record. There have been discussions with counsel because the child was brought in.
Yes.
The court did tell both counsel, who told their clients, that I was going to talk very briefly to Nicholas and asked very limited questions about only the incident. So when Nicholas came in, I told him I wanted to ask about the scout camp. I mean, that I was going to talk very briefly to Nicholas and ask very limited questions. Asked very limited questions. That transcript is a little tricky. I'm not sure whether the court told counsel in advance of interviewing the child, I intend to focus on the May incident. It's sort of how I read that, although it's a little bit.
And, Your Honor, I will tell you, we were not only asked about, we were not even only told about it, we were asked about it. And we were told what she was going to discuss with the minor child. We were asked if that was okay, and we were asked to talk to our clients. We did. And so this was agreed upon, Your Honor. That's why I'm kind of stunned to see this in the actual
But it's
record.
Not in the record. I mean, there's no agreement on the record. You'd agree with that.
Yeah, understandable. Absolutely. I can only say that the reason why the judge brought the child back again was where she said on the record, hey, we didn't want to end up having him subjected to cross-exam. And she does advise that she asked us about it. Your Honors, that was a stipulation. We were told in advance what was going to happen. It's not something new. And there was no objection at all. If, in fact, the judge came back on the record and said, all right, well, I've asked the child this, that, and the other thing, Mr. Maher did not object at all. Nothing on the record showing there was an objection. And I will submit to you the reason why he didn't object to it is because we agreed to that when we were off the record, Your Honor. The idea
There was no follow-up saying, I would like you to go back. I object to the limits. I would like you to go back.
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize. Mm-hmm. You are correct. With regards to the idea, I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit about striking the records here. The trial court, yes, the trial court then did admit, I think on like finding number 13 or finding number 12, it talked about the idea that, you know, it said, hey, listen, there was in fact physical contact. And then it says, okay, you know, there was a claim that she was pushed by him or elbowed by him. And then it says, in looking at the records, we verified that. But then the very next one, I think it talks about the idea of the photographs. And the idea that she did end up seeing other things.
My concern about, and I'd like you to address, the sufficiency of the findings, because there are specific findings that of bruising, you know, the day after the altercation, she took photos of her arm, which showed bruising. And that she went to the emergency room. But you... A lot of the findings are a recitation of the testimony that happened, competing testimony, without a credibility determination or determination about what actually happened. So it's less about the harm and more about what happened. Was there a domestic abuse that caused that harm? Are the factual findings there?
I believe they are, Your Honor. I mean,
how so? Which factual finding tells us that the court agreed or found credible Ms. Oldenburg's version of events?
Okay. Your Honor, with all the respect, if you look at number 12, and I apologize, this is with the result of the case ending 1211. I know there was two separate findings. So number 12 lays out that Ms. Oldenburg testified that Mr. Shanse had, in fact, elbowed her in the shoulder and shoved her into the door. That's essentially one of the elements.
Right, but you see that the problem is that it starts with she testified.
Sure.
Then the next one says he testified to the following,
right,
which is different. So, you know, a district court reciting testimony without making a finding isn't a finding that he elbowed her, it's that she testified.
Well, I think the finding is when she writes in there, she's saying this is what she found to be the testimony. Mm-hmm. She doesn't necessarily say, hey, all of this leads me to this actual finding. However, she does end up stating down below, the order for protection is granted, and if you look below, it also says the order for protection against Daniel Shanse on behalf is denied as the legal standard is not met. And so I think what we're Monday morning quarterbacking, in fairness, I certainly don't want to end up being rude, but I think we're Monday morning quarterbacking the idea that this judge has in fact made findings that there was physical abuse that occurred, that she was fearful, and as a result of that, she put in place the order. I think it goes without saying that she found that to be credible.
So we should imply, in a sense, we should imply an ultimate finding that domestic abuse occurred and that the appellant committed it based on how the evidence is recited and the fact that the order for protection was issued.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the order for protection being issued, I submit to you that the judge did find that all of these things rise to the occasion of a violation of the domestic abuse statute.
Are you aware of any cases where this court has affirmed, absent an express finding, that domestic abuse occurred?
I can't tell you that I am, but I also can't tell you that there is not an absolute finding here with regards to the elements. I wholeheartedly believe that between 12, 13, I believe that it does set out her understanding, the judge's understanding, and the judge's belief. Because of the fact, you know, she even advised that she did not, in fact, find that there was imminent risks, so she got rid of the ex parte. There was an ex parte that was granted on behalf of my client. It was then taken away, essentially said, well, we don't believe that you've met the ex parte. Go ahead, make some legal arguments. Both of you guys file legal arguments, and then I'll make my findings. She did the same for Mr. Shantz against Ms. Oldenburg. That ex parte matter was dismissed and vacated. It was only after we submitted our memorandums that the judge turns around and says, okay, here's what was testified to, here's my findings, and an order is issued. I think it's important to understand that there was one order that was not issued and one order that was. And it specifically states in there that he didn't meet his burden to end up having it found. And I apologize if I did not answer your question. Please let me know. There were multiple findings of physical harm that the judge made with regards to this. I believe wholeheartedly that it met its standards. And I can tell you, Your Honor, the concerning part here that I have is that counsel stands here and says, well, we didn't end up getting to use our records, and we should have been able to talk about the incident back in February. Since this came out, Your Honor, in their affidavit or in their memorandum, they note that his client, in fact, filed another OFP, and that was denied after a full-blown hearing, after a garden.
But that's not part of the record that
I understand,
we're reviewing.
But my point is, Your Honor, I'm saying this judge knew about and had the history of the case. That's why she said, I'm going to end up doing this based on the May 4th incident with the child. We knew that. We were told this beforehand. And there was no objection, Your Honor. With regards to that, if you have no other questions, I will sit down and see and have a moment to respond if I may. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Maher, you will have the last word. Five minutes for rebuttal.
I just want to address Mr. Carlson indicated that no objection was made to the records he presented. I'd just direct the court to page 9 of the transcript from the May 25th, is it 25th? The May hearing. Court said he was offering the medical records.
And by the medical records, you're talking now about respondent's medical records, not the child's.
Yes. Okay. And the court said, and counsel, you've had an opportunity to review that as well. I responded, yes. Technically, they aren't certified, so, and then the court broke in, technically. They're just attached to the affidavit. And I said, yeah, so I'm fine if you consider them. I tried to submit certified records, so I assume that those are, but we'll get to that. I guess I was making a mistake by assuming that I would get treated the same way that I treat opposing counsel. I could have stood on the rules and said, no, I don't want those records in. But I said, we're going to submit records too, so if that's the way the court's going to look at it. And then, of course, the court didn't. And that's when I said, well, fair play. If you're not going to consider mine, then I want his stricken, because if we're going to play fair, we'll play fair. And part of my problem is sometimes I play nice and expect fair play. And I don't feel like that happened in this case. As far as the discussions off the record, there's a reason why we have a record, because you want to have things detailed. And I don't want, I mean, counsel was sort of testifying about what happened. I'm not going to do that.
But we are left with the record showing no objection even after the fact. After the district court said, this is what I talked with the child about, and I did not talk about the February 23rd.
There was no record of an objection. And even in Mr. Carlson's rendition of what happened, he said, she told us what she would discuss. It wasn't up for discussion. She said, this is what I'm doing. So, I mean, if I'd been able to elicit testimony from the child, then the objections could be on the record, but we're relying on, you know, a hallway discussion. And so I'm not prepared to tell the court what happened just because that's why we have a record. But as far as the actual finding, there was no actual finding of abuse. You could say, well, she could have, but it's not this court's role to infer a finding that was not made. And as far as Mr. Carlson ended discussing Mr. Shands's order, where the court said he didn't meet the burden. And that goes to the same problem with Ms. Oldenburg's order, is she didn't make the findings. She said Mr. Shands testified that he was trying to protect the child. In the transcript, the child said he thought Mr. Shands was trying to protect him. And the court said, well, he didn't meet the burden. The court didn't find either Mr. Shands or the child not credible. The court simply, the court didn't make a credibility determination and just said it wasn't met. Didn't make an abuse finding and said, I'll issue the order. And so I think, unless you have any other questions, that's all the response I had to Mr. Carlson.
Seeing no additional questions, thank you both. We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. That is the last case on our calendar for oral argument, so we are in recess.
All rise.